honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Hard to believe another year is almost gone, and what a privilege it is to bring you these veteran stories on the radio, and I want to wish you the merriest of Christmases. We have a couple more Christmas time memories from World War II to share with you before our time runs out. Alvin Pate was a highly decorated soldier with the 91st Infantry Division. He earned the Silver Star and Bronze Star in helping to liberate Italy, and he witnessed something he did not expect on Christmas Eve, 1944.
We had been 5 miles in advance of the main line from Livignano, and the captain asked me, he says, do you think you could take a detail of men? We'd been up there 30 days at that time, mm-hmm. back to Livignano, that was where the main line was, and pick up letters and packages for our troops that are here. I said, well, I can sure try, sir.
Well, why don't you tell us what day that was?
Yeah, I took 6 men. Can you believe this is in detail?
And this was Christmas Eve, 1944, right?
That's right.
Uh-huh.
So I thought the Germans may have thought more about Christmas than we thought they did. Because as we advanced, the snow was about hip deep or a little more, and I'd been leading with the 6 men until the Germans, they closed off in front of us, and I told my men, I says, form a skirmish line. If you're familiar with the skirmish line, that's you spread out to where each one has a field of fire.
Right.
Okay. When the Germans seen us do that, they opened up just apart, and we went right on through. They didn't even fire on us, and we went through to Livignano, and we were loaded with mail and packages and things going back for our company, which was 200 men, you know. But, you know, we formed a skirmish line when we seen them closing off in front of us. They opened up and let us go right on through.
Now, how close would you say you were to the German soldiers? How far away were they? A matter of feet?
Maybe 50 yards.
Uh-huh.
They backed off and let us go right on through them.
Did you make eye contact with anyone?
I think, no, they didn't fire nothing on us. And we didn't fire at them. But they let us go right on through with all that mail and packages. And now, if they'd have started opening up on us, we'd had mail and packages scattered all over because we'd had to be firing, right?
You probably would have had you laid out on the snow dead, too.
Yeah. So I saw that a lot because I thought that was kind of funny, you know, because maybe the Germans thought more about Christmas than we thought they did, huh?
Well, what did that mean to you when you, and I imagine that after the war you probably reflect on that, and maybe this Christmas and every Christmas you reflect on that. Did that tell you that this was about more than the hostilities, more than one man trying to kill another, and that there was a common denominator even though you're on opposite sides of that conflict?
Well, when we were in advance of the main line, 4 or 5 miles,
yep.
From Livignano, the GIs, they always nicknamed everything. They called it the Gobbler's Knob.
All right.
Okay, they nicknamed the Gobbler's Knob. But then Livignano itself was nicknamed by the Germans Liver and Onions. But anyway, I came through 288 days of it, and I was the only boy in our family, and someone said, well, you could have got out of it because you were the only man in the family.
Right.
I says, no, I didn't want out of it. I got in it. Only way I wanted out was to win, you know, win the war and get it over with.
And I imagine, I've interviewed a lot of guys who lived through the Battle of the Bulge. I know how cold that winter was in 1944. But I imagine that Christmas of 1944 was probably about as memorable a Christmas as you've ever had.
I think so. I really think so, because I think we always heard that the Germans didn't believe in Christmas and stuff like that. That made me think they knew more about Christmas than we thought they did, don't you think?
Even in wartime, Christmas means something. That was Alvin Pate. And the last memory we'll hear today comes from Don Cooley, another one of those golden lions of the 106th Infantry Division who was captured during the Battle of the Bulge.
Do you know why they called that thing the Battle of the Bulge?
Why don't you explain it for us?
Well, you have to visualize the result. And that is the Germans pushed in, and they pushed in right where we were, right in the middle of it. Somehow we got energized, and it was also the forest. So the Germans said, well, why mess around with these? We'll just go around them. And so that they went around us and took 6,000 prisoners from our division and went around us, and they were headed for Antwerp because that was what the Allies needed so badly to get supplies up. And they made this huge bulge in the battle line and were stopped, fortunately. And that's how it got its name. The press, you know, called it, this is a bulge, and that's what it is.
Yeah, and you said fortunately they were stopped, but that came at a heavy, heavy cost in American lives. And I'm interested in those few days now before your life really changed. So you said you get there at December 11th, the Ardennes Forest. What was your job, or what did you understand your duty to be?
Well, I was a battalion clerk. When we moved up, the battalion commander was in the Siegfried Line. We were at the Siegfried Line, which were these big cement encasements they built after World War One, and it was the headquarters for the battalion. And so my job was working with him and doing the morning report and all that sort of stuff. And so we were moving forward. We advanced forward, but the Germans were there. And in fact, the unit I was in, the immediate group of men, we didn't fire a shot because our regimental commander notified that we were to give up, break up your rifle. And it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon in December. It gets dark at that. And so the Germans were in such a hurry to come and infiltrate and take us prisoners because of that, I think, that they didn't search us very closely. And I had a baby Brownie camera in my car. How I happened to have that with me at that time, I don't know, but I've got that yet, and I'll show it to you.
Well, and some of the pictures that camera took, you still have. They're incredibly well preserved, and we'll put some of those up at hometownheroesradio.com. But I'm trying to understand what it must have been like for you. You're not quite to your 21st birthday. It's just a couple weeks before Christmas. You haven't even experienced combat yet, and you're being told before you guys even put up a fight, you have to surrender.
This particular location in the forest, mm-hmm, where we were, yes.
And that was the 423rd Regiment, is that right?
That's correct. So, Headquarters Company, 423rd.
Headquarters Company, 423rd mm-hmm Regiment. So how did that compute in your head? I imagine that had to be kind of hard to swallow or come to grips with.
Oh, we were just PO'd. You know, for gosh sakes, you know, get us, keep moving back through their lines where they had soldiers coming up, some horse-driven vehicles, and here we are, a long chain of prisoners.
And, you know, for those who are hearing this for the first time, maybe they're saying, well, why did they have to surrender? Why did their commanding officers give that order? Can you explain that?
Yes, I think I can. They wised up to the fact that they were completely cut off from the 3rd Regiment of our division back at St. Vith. This was agreed. And we were out of communications with some of them. They did it as, I'm sure, it was just to save lives.
That's what I really wanted to know. Because of the positioning of the German troops, had your regiment tried to fight, it would have just resulted in more lives lost, and whoever was left standing would end up prisoners. But there was no hope of breaking out of that and reconnecting the lines.
That's what these regimental commanders decided. In my company was the son of our regimental commander. You can imagine how that make him feel. I think that was a bad mistake of the Army to have a relative under the command of a top general.
So he took the brunt of all the criticism of his father?
He broke down practically. Mm. He was older.
Well, what about you? How did you handle this? Because I'm sure you never anticipated it when you were going overseas.
Well, of course not. We just handled it because it happened. And fortunately, there were several of us who were good friends that were together. And so we were all just terribly disappointed. I know that doesn't sound strong enough, but, you know, we're young kids.
Well, and now you know with 75-plus years of hindsight, what the next few months would be like for you. But do you remember at the time trying to figure out what kind of future you were looking forward to?
No, I know. We were just trying to keep dry because it was rainy and the snow was melting that day and feet were probably wet and cold and we were hungry.
And what did the Germans do with you?
They marched us for 2 days. They put on a train that had brought soldiers up to the front. These were boxcars, these 40 and 8. 40 men and 8 horses, I guess is what that came from. And so 3 or 4 days later, they got us into these trains and locked the doors and started east.
Did you have anything to eat during that time?
Yeah, I think we had, usually it was potato soup. I had kept in the pocket of my big heavy overcoat a D-ration, which is chocolate bars, which is the smallest volume, more energy than anything that we were issued. Not by the Germans, and I just had it with me because the last couple of days we were on foot in the forest and not back in the cement headquarters. Then once we got on the boxcar, my notes would tell when we got food or didn't, but I think each day we got potato soup or something they opened up and gave us a little and probably poured it into our steel helmets to drink out of, which we had used for other things while sequestered in the boxcar. My job is a battalion clerk. I happen to have in my pocket another blank sheet called a morning report where you list the names of everybody. And so I passed this thing around the boxcar and had everyone sign it that was in there. I think there were 60 of us then. The third day we were strafed because the boxcars were not labeled and these were, we think, British plays. So they opened the doors and we got out to dive in the ditch. Yeah, it was cold by then. But the point I want to make is that they did run along this train, long train, and open up the doors when the strafing occurred. The trouble is, strafing's over before they could get to 2 or 3 cars.
And when you say these boxcars aren't labeled, what you're saying is if they had said POW on the top.
Red Cross.
Or a Red Cross. Then the planes would have known not to shoot.
That's right.
But they don't know.
They don't know.
And so you guys are helpless inside this boxcar, and if they don't open the doors, you're going to have a lot of guys die.
That's right, or you hope that pilot is a bad shot. Some guys took off at that point and didn't come back to the boxcar.
Did you think about trying that?
Not a bit.
Why not?
Well, I think it was because if I had thought about it, I think I would have nixed it because I think it was the fourth day into Germany, third or fourth. That's a pretty long way to get back through the lines.
So you knew.
And even no food.
And wherever you're going to be, it's German-held territory. So the likelihood of you getting through all that and back to American territory is rough. And are you getting pretty hungry by now?
Yes.
Are you getting scared?
No, I don't think so. We were with friends. That helped so much.
Well, and you said you celebrated your 21st birthday in a boxcar. I don't think that's how most young men imagine spending their 21st birthday.
Well, I wouldn't interview very many people with that question, but I think I know the answer, so I don't need to.
Did it occur to you that it was your birthday? Did you mark the occasion?
Oh, sure. The day after Christmas.
Well, I guess I should ask you about Christmas, too, then, huh?
Well, there was a significant thing. We started singing Christmas carols in the boxcar. And I get emotional about that. There was another fellow among our group, had a good voice and knew the words. But pretty soon other people chimed in. And the irony, of course, is that that's a German carol, Silent Night.
So you're somewhere in Germany, you're prisoners in a boxcar, freezing and starving.
Well, we weren't freezing in there. From that standpoint, we were better off than the soldiers that didn't get caught. It got down to the coldest winter to date there in Germany, and we were sheltered. And that was something to be thankful for.
But here you are, 60 GIs, singing Silent Night inside a boxcar?
Yeah. Well, it was Christmas.
How did it sound?
They didn't sing happy birthday to me the next day, but I don't think I told them anyway. They might have. You know, what do you do? You're just there all day sitting on your duff and chatting. Because we were in that boxcar for 9 days.
Well, and I imagine you've probably heard Silent Night hundreds of times in the years since then.
Sure. Wonderful song.
Can you listen to it now without thinking of that boxcar on Christmas 1944?
No.
And what do you think about when your mind goes back to that moment with those
guys?
Oh,
I cloud up.
You might be the only one from that boxcar who's still here.
It's very possible.
I'm not trying to put words in your mouth or make it more than it was, but I can sense just from your description and your emotion that this was a real powerful moment for you.
Oh, yes.
What did it do for you?
Made me feel better, probably.
Gave you a little sliver
and
of hope.
And also, it was another bond with the others that were singing with us, which we needed at that time.
A little bit of hope goes a long way, especially in war and especially in captivity. And hope, ultimately, is what Christmas time represents. So I hope it permeates your home this holiday season and on into the new year. Thanks for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.